agenda so that we have a more meaningful deliberations, and members are able to be given an opportunity to go through the presentations. So there's nothing, we're not going to try to just spread to the point. I see that we have got some two people that are not part of us. We will, when I mean us, which are not part of the department, nor the portfolio committee. Can they then introduce themselves using the mic, the name, the surname, and the organization or the institution that they're coming from?
Good morning, members. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. I monitor Sihle Women.
Sihle
who? Sihle Women.
Good morning. My name is Marco Schmidt. I work for the German Consulate General. I report to the German Embassy in Pretoria. And I've spent quite some time here with the labor bills, the minimum wage bill that was done in the last parliament.
Okay, welcome. And the gentleman did say that when we see him leaving, we must not take that what we are discussing is not important, what is presented is not important, it's only that he has got some other, he's also going to other committees. Okay, thank you very much. We have got two apologies. We have got one, Honorable Bagram, who will be late. Honorable Yilmaz is in another committee, which is outside the province. And the minister, I'm just told that it's apology from the minister. I don't know what's just an apology. I'm told the letter has just came now. PLO, you want?
Thanks, Chair. The minister is in the cabinet meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The Deputy Minister will be joining us shortly.
Oh, thank you very much, Honourable Members. We will start with the compensation fund. But just for the benefit of the members, we'll understand that the compensation fund, DG, has been in and out of the portfolio committee. We just for the benefit of the members, but obviously there will be some processes that they will still be engaged with, dealing with, and I hope in the presentation the commissioner will then be able to in the presentation, just to assist the members, say, what do I mean about that? Just say, I'll make an example, the robot is red, and you leave it there. Said, no, we changed the robot. It was on amber, now it's on red because of A, B, C, D. I'm just making that example, so that members are not there. And I will now hand over to, there was a plea which between the compensation fund and the UIF commissioners. I allowed themselves to deal with that. And the outcome was that the agenda remains as it is. So I see that they strike at the compensation fund commissioner asserted his authority And that's good. I just want us to loosen up and so that we, yeah. But no, thank you very much, honorable members. We will then hand over to the commissioner, or if the DG wants to start, that would be fine. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair, and the honorable members. I think, Chair, seniority prevailed. If we were going to use age, the UIF commissioner would have won the Chair, just to introduce the CF delegation and also some of the colleagues that we have here. The commissioner is accompanied by the CFO, Mr. Tando Edbush. The gentleman sitting right there. And next to him is Mr. Johnny Modiba, who is the COO. And we also brought along the Director Internal Audit, Ms. Oitume Lukumbu. Director Risk, Ms. Lerato Khwele. Right behind me. And the Chief Director of Rehabilitation and Orthotics, Ms. Fakim. We have the support staff from the ministry and the DM's office and my office as well. I think they are well known in the committee. Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to the commissioner.
Thank you. Morning, honorable chairperson and honorable members. So I'll take the members through the performance of the compensation fund. Perhaps I'll start at slide number 7, which shows the strategic focus of the compensation fund. So this is the final year of the 5-year strategic plan that we have for the compensation fund. And just a reminder that there's two strategic objectives that we are pursuing in the fund. One is to provide fast and reliable and accessible care services by 2020. And then the second strategic objective, providing effective and efficient client-oriented support services. So these are the two objectives within which the performance indicators that we'll be reporting on today fall in. In the next slide, it just shows the service development indicators are scattered across the three pillars of the organization, which is rehabilitation, medical benefits, as well as the compensation benefits. I'll move to slide 12, Chair, which is then just a summary of our performance for the quarter. Now, we under providing effective and efficient client-oriented support, there are three planned indicators that we set for annually. One of these indicators is the one that we report on in quarter one. And under providing fast and reliable and accessible COIS services by 2020, we have six indicators for the year, five of which were reportable in quarter one, because these six indicators that are reportable under quarter one, they also are reportable throughout the rest of the quarter. So our performance with regard to the first strategic objective, the one indicator that we meant to achieve in quarter one, we did not achieve. I'll touch on the reasons and the specifics of that indicator later on in the presentation. And of the five that were reportable under the providing fast and reliable and accessible COIS services, two were achieved and three were not achieved, which gives us an achievement rate of about 40%. So in total, of the indicators that we have, we were able to achieve about 33% of the indicators that we have. In the next slide, we just break down the same performance of the indicators according to the four core programs. We've got four programs in the compensation fund according to which the budget as well as annual performance is broken down. The administration, which relates to the support functions of the fund, and then the other three, program 2 to program 4, relate to the core functions of the fund. The first, program 2, is the COIS services, program 3 is the medical services, and then program 4 is the rehabilitation services. And the table just shows the breakdown of the indicators. What it shows is that, for example, for the core indicators, we were able to achieve 50% of the indicators that were reportable in quarter one for both for the two core services, medical services, and the one And for rehabilitation, that's one thing that we need to not miss the performance standards that we set for quarter one as well as for administration. The next presentation just shows the next slide now breaks down the performance into where it shows our performance indicator, which ones we're supposed to report to annually. Just provide the details. I'll just keep that and I'm going to go straight to the details. If we go to slide 17, slide 17 just shows the trend of the performance over the last financial year and where we are in the first quarter of the year. It just shows that there is a decline on the performance that is reported for quarter one. Now, when I get to the details of the performance, Chair, the next slide just shows for the first indicator which relates to cost savings, 90% of claims adjudicated within 30 working days of receipt. We had a performance standard there of 90% in 30 days. All provinces met this performance target. We were able to adjudicate 93% of the claims within 30 days of them being registered and lodged with the fund, which is about 40,000 claims out of the 43,000 claims that were registered during quarter one of 2019-2020 financial year. The next line is the one where we did not achieve. We had a performance measure of 85% of medical invoices finalized within 40 working days. This means they need to have been adjudicated, processed, validated, and paid within the 40 working days. We have a performance measure of 85%. We achieved about 60% of this. We received 260,000 invoices. About 169,000 were finalized within 40 days of receipt, which gives us 60%. Now here, traditionally we always had a two-step validation process for invoices. When we receive invoices from medical practitioners, if the system does the validations of the invoices to check if it's using the correct ICD-10 codes, for the correct clients and so on. So the invoices that once they pass the initial validation, the system will then automatically auto-pay those invoices. Overnight it will then pick up those invoices and pay it upfront. And then the more complex invoices are the ones that would have to be seen by officials of the fund to pay. The Auditor General highlighted a lot of control weaknesses in that. He said we needed to have more eyes looking at the invoices as opposed to allowing the system to be able to do that. So this quarter was the first quarter when we implemented those changes. So it took a bit of time for people to just try to adjust to the new way of working. So as a result, a lot of the provinces took a bit of time, and only towards the end of the quarter was their performance picking up in terms of looking at the invoices. Before the system could automatically pay some of these invoices. So that is the main reason why performance with regard to medical invoices was not at the same level that it had always been in the last few years. The other indicator was 85% of the pre-authorizations responded to within 10 working days on previously finalized cases. Here is where if clients need to undergo medical procedures, and the case needs to be reopened so that the doctor can either subject the person to an operation and so on, they have to submit a pre-authorization request. The standard is that you must approve within 10 working days of receiving the pre-authorization request, 85% of these. We were able to achieve about 97% of all the requests that were received were adjudicated and finalized and responded to the doctor within the 10 working days of receiving the request, and all provinces were able to achieve this particular target. The next one on the next slide is we also provide assistive devices to clients, and where clients are in receipt of either wheelchairs or orthotic devices that they use as assistive devices, they have to get approval from the fund whenever the treating practitioner has to prescribe a new device. So the standard there is that within 15 working days of receiving the device, we need to have responded and provided a response to the practitioner so that they can then issue out the device. In this case, we had 7 provinces achieving the target, and about 2 provinces did not meet the target, which are the two provinces that have contributed to the fund meeting the target by almost 2% of the set target. And here the province is Eastern Cape and Gauteng. The problem with these two is that there was a lot of capacity constraints in the two provinces. For example, the Eastern Cape only appointed the rehabilitation official midway through the quarter, and as a result they relied on assistance from other provinces that were then helping them with the approvals where they needed approvals, and we also provided some support from a head office function, so they were not able to respond to a lot of these times. Same thing with Gauteng province as well. Gauteng province, they deal with the bulk of the clients. Most of the time, almost 50 or so percent of the claims that we receive always come from Gauteng. And they also have the same staff complement as many other provinces with regard to setting of the skilled personnel. So they then have to work through a number of the requests compared to other provinces. We have seen appointed a lot of professionals at the head office. We have physiotherapists at the head office, consultants head office as well. So now, where there's provinces that are falling short on performance, they're able to deploy some of the personnel at the head office to assist those provinces that have performance issues with volumes and so on. And so that also would help. And the because we have some of the Gauteng officials in the building where we're sitting, the disability manager from Gauteng who deals with these prosthetic devices has also been moved closer to head office so that they can also have some kind of support from the team at head office where they use need to do something. The on slide 23 then it just shows the explanation I was providing in terms of the reasons why we have not met the performance targets that we have set for ourselves. I think that's the main share the presentation of the compensation plan.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Honourable members, the presentation, any questions, clarities, comments? Honourable Dine, Honourable Nana, Honourable Nahutse, Gabe, and then Honourable Kabari in that order. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane. Good morning, guys. Jane, my questions relate to the payment of claims. I'm not sure if all of you saw the story in the media yesterday with regard to the payment of claims to medical service providers. I spoke to a few sources as well, and apparently there are 14,000 claims outstanding to the value of 800 million rand. I also saw the commissioner's reply to the media with regards to these claims, and as I have it, over 200 million rand worth of claims were paid, but that was to three main intermediaries, which was to the value of 110 million apparently, 94 million and 87 million. So my question is, according to medical service providers and intermediaries, it is not possible to lodge claims on the systems, they are not getting paid. And this has a direct, they haven't been getting paid since August. And this has a direct influence on jobs. There's apparently nearly 1,200 jobs that are going to be lost due to non-payment by the fund. So that's the first thing. Why are these claims not being paid out? Why is it taking so long? And as I understand, there have been payments made, but only, as I said, to three main intermediaries. Then also, there are rumours of victimisation of medical service providers by the fund. If the commissioner could just maybe elaborate on that, does he know about that? What is going on there? Apparently, it is with regards to the if medical service providers ask questions, so the payments are being delayed. It's been delayed with regards to questions and inquiries that postpone it for another 30 days, so that's the one thing. And then the other thing is, let me just see here on my list. Yes, that's what I have for now. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity given and thanks for the presentation from the Commissioner. Chairperson, I always, all the time, having the concern when the good things are happening in many other provinces, and there are provinces that always lag behind in many things that the government is providing. I just want from the Commissioner, excuse me, to give me a clarity on page 9, slide 18, about the adjudicated claims that were registered and those that were completely adjudicated. Because 5,560 and those adjudicated, it's 522, so it's not a change. Chairperson, my concern is that when these figures compared to other provinces are this low, is this because of the capacity, or is there any other reason that might force the matter to be that the services that is being provided to this province is low compared to other provinces? I know that on page 12 and 24, also Eastern Cape comes out, but compared to county. The Commissioner has explained that why Gauteng is at 57%, because of the bulk of the responsibility. Everyone knows that Gauteng is very much populated, so what they are doing might be too much compared to other provinces. But he has not given us the reason for the Eastern Cape, at which stands at 36. So what might be the contributing factor to the Eastern Cape to stand at 36 in terms of the percentage achievement?
With those
educated
processes. Thanks. Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, members. I will start at slide 17, the Commissioner. In slide 17, it shows a decrease compared to the previous year. I mean, in terms of quarter one of the previous year. The quarter one of the previous year, 18-19, was the performance was at 86%. But this year, and it gives you the signal during the last quarter of 2018-2019, when you closed that financial year with 67% decrease. And when it comes to the first quarter, which is the next quarter after the last quarter of the previous year, it decreased by again 50%, which is 33%. And when we came back from the recess, you will come and present the second quarter of 1920. So what are the steps taken to avoid this decrease which we are seeing here? What assurance can you give us that in the quarter which you will come and present when we come back, it won't be maybe 15, like you see it started to decrease from 67% to 33%. What assurance are you giving us, Commissioner, that you would make a turnaround in terms of achieving your target per quarter? The second question or comment is on the slide 18 and 19. We appreciate the performance of 90 days of claim adjudication, 90% of 30 working days, of 91 up to 97, the highest. however, would like the to try by all means to push to 100%, because those are the claims affecting our people. So when you said 97, it means there's a 3% who was maybe not assisted. Maybe you can try to improve to maximize the performance on these 30 days adjudication of claims. And also together with the slight 20 is a good, but we will appreciate if it can be pulled up to 100%, because we strive for the 100% for everything. Like in slide 20, you can see in Free State, Limpopo, and Northern Cape, yeah, you achieved 100%. It means it's achievable. So we want all provinces to have such. Try to eliminate the 1% which is you are losing. So on slide 21, this is going to the department. Unfortunately, I don't see the minister here, but the DG, because you are here. On the slide 21, you can see again, it means we have a problem in Gauteng. Again, Gauteng here on the slide 21 has decreased to 57, performance of 57%. Others, they're performing 197, although we heard about the reason. So, but the reason, it's like we can understand the reason, but we don't know how true is that, because the DG, how can you leave the province of Gauteng, which is pulling you down, which is not the high volume of claims, without making them to have capacity in order to improve to the level where they don't drag down the performance of the CF, the compensation fund, and at the end the department is home. So this housing must be attended as soon as possible. We will prefer to see on the next reporting of the second quarter the improvement, and we want your undivided attention, DG, to try by fast track to solve the problem how then, because it's a highly populated problem, we know. But hence we need a highly skilled people to improve the service there. On slide, on slide 23, you mentioned the reasons for what happened to under or to overperformance. So can you try to tell us in detail what are the plans so that in the next quarter this must not be repeated? Thank you.
Welcome, Jen. I'm sure members didn't see you coming.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you, Chair, the Deputy Minister. In other words, I'm not going to last. Good morning, honorable members and the DG and the team. Chair, firstly, a comment that report in its current format, it doesn't give us the clear picture in terms of the areas of these medical invoices come from, whether it's occupational health, what type of diseases. That these are the categories. The reason I'm saying that, you look at the number, 260,000 invoices that have been forwarded to the department for payment. How does this relate to inspections in terms of what is happening in the industry, and which industries, those that have these challenges of whether you might say are sick or injuries, you're not sure. Now, so that we are able to deal with the symptoms. We are able to deal with the real problem rather than addressing the symptoms. So I think the reporting format, understanding that this comes from the previous 5-year strategic framework plan, however, it would assist if ever we are able to compare apples with apples, so that we deal with the challenges that the honourable member from the FF Plus raised. It's going to assist us to really understand the real issues. Secondly, Chair, there is no financial performance report submitted. Now, it gives us a challenge. You have 250,000 claims for medical invoices, but there is no financial indication of that, or what has ever been, what has been paid, 155,000. Where's the financial indication of that? It doesn't show on the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Christine, to the GM and colleagues. I'll start with slide number 20. You know, Chair, I believe that everyone needs to be commended or appreciated for the good work done. For this particular person to be able to be motivated and put more effort in trying to improve where they are kept. When you look at slide number 20, the entity has done quite very well, focusing on pre-authorization responding within 10 working days, where all the provinces actually performed very well. I think I need to start the education before coming up with some critics. On slide number 13, Shea, I have a problem, Shea, with the program that has been set here. When you look at the number of programs that did not meet the set target, I can see program number 4, where it says achieved 0. I would love the commissioner maybe to also provide the reason for this non-achievement of this set target here on slide number 13. The other issue, Chair, is on slide number 17. Yeah, when you look at the trend line here, Chairperson, you can see that in quarter 1, 2018-19, versus quarter 1, 2019-20, there is a decline on the performance. So one would love to get maybe some causal factors in relation to this decline, Chairperson. Then on slide 21, As much as the commissioner did give us some of the reasons for non-performance in these two provinces, which is EC and GP, but I think Chairperson, our approach as per the plan that he has, since he has indicated that they are going to deploy some personnel from the head office, of which I don't believe that those people will be full-time in these provinces. When I look at this approach, it is more of a reactive approach, whereas we need to have a plan in place which is more of a proactive approach in trying to address this problem. Because if we don't have a plan in place that is going to be employed in trying to ensure that we improve in these provinces, even in the next quarter two, we are going to experience the same challenge. So I want him to be brief to tell us what is it that they are going to do. Because if we really say we are going to rely in this intervention of deploying people from the head office, I know they are not going to the station then. They will come and visit once in a while and assist when necessary. So I think they must come up with another strategy that is going to assist us to improve in these provinces. And when I look at them, these provinces are very huge and they need a serious attention. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. GM and DG, I never did mathematics. I'm not a mathematician, but I did what is called now math link. And math link is near academic. If you go to page 20, right, by just looking into the calculation, I don't know, you say it was GP and KZN. 186. But that total, if it's the total of all that, it can't be 92. No? That's why my starting point is I never did maths. I don't know how. I did what was called arithmetic. Again, on page 20, pre-authorization responded to within 10 days, no? Again, same provinces, 163, 181. You can't have a total, if it's the total of that, you can't have a total which is 89. What has gone wrong there? I think I'm covered with other questions. I was more concerned about the financials, because the reason for us to be concerned about the financials is because we don't want at the end. It's only then that we're going to as we monitor, DM and DG, as we monitor and conduct our oversight, we must then be able to have that balance. It makes us to be a bit confused and create an unnecessary discomfort. Because how questions are going to be asked, which are questions that are going to be bordering into us not trusting what you are giving us. We don't want to, I don't think as the chair of the committee, I don't want a situation where we border into undermining or doubting the integrity of the report and the work of the department again. I personally, I don't have an energy for that, because that is the thing that is going to make us not to be able to work. So the issues of the financials are very, very important. I'm also concerned about the decline, although my question is going to be a bit different to what Honorable Lausi asked, that tell us how are you going to do it. It's only going to say, it then means there is a problem. Is it possible for you to explain to us why that sharp decline from the which you slide back, by the way? Slide the one that has got a My apologies. One second, please. It's quite alarming, teaching. If it's going to be like this, then quarter one, and explain to us that situation. I'm aware that you have been coming in front of us, you have been explaining some of the issues, but make us really to understand moving forward that we are then going to be able to have a. I think those are the questions, and I don't know how you're going to respond, the teaching commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So maybe let me start with the appreciation for good performance, because we seldom get that. Thank you very much for that. Chair, Honorable Members, if you go through this report, you'll pick up that the main area where we haven't done well is in the area of which is in slide 19, and it's the area that deals with the rehabilitation, disability and rehabilitation. And honourable members will remember that when we came before the portfolio committee, we said a number of the things that we do in provinces to make sure that provinces have the necessary capacity is to make sure that each province mirrors what is happening at head office in terms of the structure that we have at head office. So one of the things that we then needed to do was to appoint disability managers in provinces. And if you look at the provinces that have done very well, are provinces that have those disability managers, and therefore they are easy to deal with the application for assistive devices and faster than those that do not have, because those provinces that do not have, they rely on the help of head office, which sometimes comes very late because they also have functions to perform. So we have appointed the disability managers in these provinces. Now that's why the commissioner was saying the performance in quarter two will not be the same. Just to indicate that the fact that we achieved 33%, and the fact that there are areas where we're saying we have not done this work within the stipulated time frame, it doesn't mean that work was not completed. So the work was completed, but it was not completed at the time that we wanted it to be completed. So if we say we've achieved 97%, what happens to the 3%? That 3% was done. It's just that we give ourselves time frames so that we achieved, we process claims faster, and that's why we'll say we'll then process application within 30 days. So what happens after 30 days? Those claims are still processed. I also want to deal with the issue of the structure of the or the format of the report. There are two reports that we normally bring to the committee. It's this one, which is a very cold report, it's got numbers. The second report is an impact analysis, which we did not attach it, even in the presentation of the department, it's not important. Because we were not too sure if the committee, that's what the committee wants. The previous committee wanted that. But what the committee wants, we'll make that information available. Because because in the CF report that deals with the impact analysis, we will have a slide that deals with that talks to the 20 most companies that contribute to injuries and diseases, and what which sectors are these companies, and the nature of the incidences of occupational diseases that you know, workers got exposed to, and then the value of the claim per each sector. In fact, we even go further, we indicate the age of the people that are injured. We have that information, we provide it, and we just you know, apologize that we have not included it. And of course, one of the slides that we have, which we did not bring again, is the slide that says, these are the claims for the different areas of work, medical claims, and your normal compensation benefits, and how many claims you've received and how much you paid. We normally have that. Because for us it was important that we have that slide. When we intervened at the compensation fund, we were unable to even pay the claims, so it's important that we see where these claims are. So we have those, that information, and the commissioner will make that information available. I think the commissioner explained the thing that for quarter one, there were some adjustments that we have to make as advised by AG, and staff felt a little bit uncomfortable with the adjustment, and they have since made that adjustment, and that's why we pretty confident that for quarter two, the report is not going to look like it's not going to look like this. Steps have been taken to correct that. Chair, I want to take full responsibility for the wrong arithmetic. We should have looked at it, and when I looked at it, I thought it was percentage, not absolute numbers. So I apologize for that. We'll make sure that it doesn't happen again. How do we make sure that Gauteng does have enough capacity to improve their performance? The advantage that Gauteng has, which is what the commissioner spoke about, is that they are closer to head office. And therefore, in instances where they don't have their own resources, they are able to tap to the resources that we have at head office confirm. In fact, as the commissioner was explaining, because of space and accommodation challenges that we have, most of the a number of these officials that are performing the disability work and all that are sitting at the confirm offices. But they do the Gauteng work. So as far as resources are concerned, they have been providing resources, just that they did not appoint at the time the disability managers, which they have now. So and that's why we're sure that things are not going to be exactly the same. I also want to make sure that I leave some questions for the commissioner to answer. I think I've explained the number of issues. I think the commissioner can respond to the questions that I have not touched.
Commissioner, I think you're taking a cut.
I thought the DG was there. Taking the bullet. Maybe let me just respond to the because the DG touched on all the performance questions that were raised. The issue of payment of claims, which is the first question that was asked, we previously reported to the committee. I think even the AG himself reported about the problems with the claims management system that the compensation bank was using, this is Metukum. The control weaknesses in the system, it was a free-for-all for a party, for lack of a better way, for medical service providers, everyone else could claim whatever you wanted to claim if you don't have enough people to be able to look through some of the invoices. We'd end up paying things in excess of what you're supposed to be paying and so on. So we started a project last year in September to develop a new claims management system, which and in August this year we communicated with, once the system was, the development process was complete, we actually communicated to all stakeholders, medical service providers and so on, and provided the timelines and the processes in which we're going to phase in the use of the new system. And part of the processes that we had communicated at the time, for example, was that we'll stop processing any new claims from the end of August, so that we can finalize all the claims that have been submitted into Medlubo, both medical as well as compensation claims, and so that we can then be able to have enough time to be able to migrate the information that was sitting in Medlubo into the new SAP system that we are paying. So all those timelines were provided to medical service providers. We also provided the business continuity plan to say, in the absence of the system, and we had indicated the date on which we are going to switch off the system, which was, I think, the 12th of September. Mm-hmm. And we said we'll then move over into the new system into October. And we provided a business continuity plan to say, we are not going to stop processing claims and pay. We've developed manual processes within which we're going to process claims and pay while we are migrating to the new system. So all those time frames were communicated to personnel. And obviously, with the new system, we have closed all the tabs. So not everybody who had been enjoying the leaking pipes that was numerous book is going to be happy with the changes that we bring in. And one of the things that we did also was, there were no controls in Umetuko when a person registers claims. If I can wake up tomorrow and say the DG has appointed me to register claims on behalf of the department, and then just register on the system and then submit claims to the Department of Labor. One of the things we brought in the system, for example, now is that if you say you are a third-party agent appointed by a company, you have to upload the correct document that shows that you've been appointed. And it goes through a three-stage process of approval to check the documents that you submitted, if they are valid, and whether the employer confirms that you are indeed an agent of this particular employer. So for us to be able to clean the system, we then said everyone is going to register afresh as users on the system. We issued a notice, I think, on the 11th of October, when we said now the system is open for registration. And there's been a lot of people that have been registering as users on the system, including a lot of employers. Obviously, some of them, if they did not have the valid documentation, we were not just giving them user access into the system. Until you provide evidence that you are appointed by the employer that you say you are representing. If you are the employer, you provide the details of the directors of the company, the IDs, and so on. So there's requirements that we publish. And all these things that we do, we publish them on the government gazette to say these are the requirements that we're going to do. We also then publish notices on the department's website to say, this is what is now open and available, and this is what you can do in the system. And obviously, we did not release the system all at once. 20th of October, we then also released, also announced that now that we started registering users, now you can start registering claims, both internal as well as external users. So that functionality has been available since. For internal users, it was from the 14th of October. For external users, it was from the 20th of October. And we'll start adjudicating and so on. We also announced, I think, on the 1st of November that now we can have medical service providers also submitting medical claims. And we could then start processing. Now, we're in the first month of actually utilizing the system now. There are challenges with the system as expected when you're deploying a new system. But work is continuing. And we have more stricter enhanced controls in the new system than we had in Umetuko. So a lot of people are not going to be happy. So the other issue is, a lot of the claims that come into the fund come through intermediaries. You won't have a single doctor. Very few doctors would say, I want to submit my claims directly. So they use what the DG explained in previous meetings of switching houses. So you find certain doctors who prefer to use 8/6 switching house, which does the administration functions. They'll take all the invoices of the medical service provider, put them in batches, and submit them to the fund through the intermediary. So even when we pay them, we pay through the intermediary, it's going into the bank account of the medical service practitioner. There are some intermediaries that have arrangements with the medical service practitioner that we pay the medical practitioner, and then when we pay into. But the claim still remains the claim of the medical practitioner. So that's why even in the article we say that we pay the medical practitioners, because we then report that for this switching house and that switching house and that switching house, we have paid a certain amount of money to them. So there is no victimization of anyone. It's just that we are a bit more stricter. Even with payment of pensions, for example, we introduced an account verification system. So if the name and ID that is on our system does not match with the name and ID that is at the bank, in the bank account, the bank rejects the payment, and then the person has to come forward and say, I wasn't paid, and then he provides the proof. In some cases, you find that a person is using another person's bank account to receive his or her pension. So those are the things that give rise to fraud, and we're now clamping down on a lot of those things. So we expect for it not, we're not expecting to make many friends, because we're now closing the tab and we're tightening up on some of the loose controls that we've had in the past in the compensation fund. I think the DG has addressed all the other performance questions, and we do apologize for not having some of the information, the financial information as well. We'll make sure that we present quota. We'll provide the supplementary information on the financial performance now, but then when we present quota 2, we'll also make sure that it's included in there.
Okay, Honorable Jeanette?
Chair, will be there. Will there be follow-up questions?
Do we have a follow-up question?
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, DG, and thank you, Commissioner, and good morning, Deputy Minister. I apologize, I didn't see you coming in. And thank you for the answers. I just have one or two follow-up questions. I must say, your job is not one that I envy. I think it's very difficult to clean up a mess that you've inherited. With regards to the outstanding payments, you've answered my question, but what is the timeline on those 14,000 outstanding payments, the 800 million rand that is still outstanding for payment? I just want to know that. And then, just to take a step back, we've spoken about the action plan, the turnaround strategy for the compensation fund. And I just want to confirm, I don't know if I've missed it, is there a timeline or a time frame set on this turnaround strategy, when everything should be in place, by which date should everything be in place, and should everything be going smoothly? Because I don't think we still have a lot of time to, for example, another 9 years to wait for the compensation fund to get everything in place with its systems and so on and so forth. And in the turnaround plan, we received the presentation on the action plan for the compensation fund, but I'm not sure if I missed it, if we received the comprehensive turnaround action plan. If that could be made available, I think we would appreciate that if it's possible. And was the action plan, or the fact that there is an action plan and there is a turnaround strategy for the compensation fund due to all the problems there, communicated to employers and service providers such as medical practitioners and intermediaries? I think it's quite important that they know that some problems have been identified and that they are receiving attention, because I'm sure a lot of the other committee members also get a lot of questions and a lot of inquiries and complaints about the compensation fund, but they are not necessarily informed that problems have been identified and there is an attempt to turn things around. And then I must also compliment you. I was at the Bloemfontein, at the department in Bloemfontein, at the Labour Centre, and there were a few staff members there that were very helpful. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Honourable
Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. My greetings to Deputy Minister and colleagues. Chair, the question may be, in fact, not necessarily a question, but also relate to a process. you look on page 19, that is the slide 19, the total number of reports is, if you turn them into warm bodies, you can easily say it's 216,000 warm bodies. The question is whether, for instance, the impact on productivity level and the extent, for instance, of the steps that we're taking to ensure compliance with safety levels by the department. The question would be, what are the steps that we're taking? Whether, for instance, this information is shared with the enforcement side of the department so that we, in fact, don't sit with high numbers in terms of the compensation is a consequence of injuries. Yeah. It's not arising out of nothing. Yeah. So the question is, to what extent this information, the interrelationship between the, particularly the enforcement side and the compensation, or they are just existing without relating to one another, so that it informs the programs that are developed by the enforcement side, yeah, setting up targets and ensuring that we monitor the employers with regard to safety at work. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Teaching Commission.
So I'll take the easier ones. The complicated ones. I'll start with the last one. The impact on productivity levels due to this large number of claims, and to what extent does that inform the work of the inspectorate? The slide that the information I referred to earlier on, which shows the 20 companies that are contributing to the incidences in the country, is meant to assist the inspectorate to plan properly. And that's why if you get a presentation from the inspectorate, they will tell you that X number of companies in the X number of companies in the different industries, they are put on a radar screen, and that's because of the information that they get from the compensation fund, where they would classify those sectors as a high risk sectors. For instance, we know that construction industry has two fatalities a week, and that's too high. So the inspectorate has put the construction industry on the radar screen, and that's why you have, interestingly, the retail as a sector also that has a large number of claims. It's in that slide, the likes of the shop run checkers. They are high up there. And one would think that the risk levels are very low, but you have a picking and dropping of items. So they don't use the correct way of picking up this. So you have economic issues in that sense. So that work is done to inform the record inspectors. We also reported the committee that compensation has a preventative budget, and part of that budget is to assist what you would call advice offices or NGOs that are in the health and safety web. And they also have, as part of their agreement with the inspectorate, made available funding for 500 occupational health and safety inspectors. So there's a there's collaboration, and as part of the amendment to the Compensation Act is to include inspectorate, even though that inspectorate is not going to be administered by the fund, so it makes it easier for the fund to then fund the activities of the inspectorate, because they are provided for in the law. With regards to the turnaround strategy, time frames are attached to the strategy. And I think that was the question asked previously in the committee with regards to the time frames. We indicated that indeed there are time frames. We know exactly which activity is going to be done and by when that activity is going to be done. Of course, we don't want to have a turnaround. We don't even call it a turnaround strategy for simple reason that we've had turnarounds and we have not turned. So we decided to call it an action plan. And if we call it an action plan, it in a way compels us to act. So that plan has all the time frames, and we don't intend to have that plan forever. And that's why it's important for us to have these milestones, and we come and report and say we intended to do this is what we have done. And what the commissioner spoke about with regards to the deployment of the new claims system was at the core of that action plan. And now that we have achieved that, we're focusing on other things that will help us to deal with a whole host of other things raised by AG and so forth. And thank you again for the compliment. Really appreciate it.
And just one other issue. I think we did promise last time after we presented the action plan that we'd submit the detailed action plan. I think that has been submitted as well, which has the full information of the different plans and the time frames that the DG spoke about as to when we hope to have achieved certain milestones for each of the activities that we've identified. Now, the issue of outstanding payments. So there will always be a view of outstanding payments from the side of the medical service provider and from our side. So a medical service provider, if he submits invoice, I spoke about earlier about closing the tabs. So a person may submit an invoice, adjusted invoice that we are not going to accept, for example. So either the invoice has been submitted because there is no claim linked to the invoice, or we have not accepted liability for the claim yet, the medical practitioner submits the invoice. They may have quoted even tariffs way above. We publish the tariffs that must be used for claiming against the compensation fund, and they may submit claims that are that are not in line with the tariffs and all those. Previously, our system was very weak in accepting some of those things. Those things would come into the system, and it would require a person to manually work through those to reject the claims and send the claims back to the employer. So that's why we always have people say, no, but the compensation fund owes me 200 million. When in actual fact, the compensation fund either owes the person less or nothing at all. We've already seen with the new claims that are being submitted in the invoice, because of the complex rules we've built in the system, where a lot of invoices are not even rejected before they even get into the system, so that the service provider can fix the invoices themselves. If there's no claim, then they need to make sure that there is a claim before they can submit some of these invoices from us. So we notice a lot of these, and whenever we get some of these things, we then work with the service providers to identify where the problem is. Is it a problem that the claims have not been submitted, or they're using incorrect tariff codes that may lead to their invoices not being paid and so on? So they, as far as we're standing, we don't have 800 million that we're owing anyone out there, because we've been, I think the DG spoke about the fact that consistently over the last 4 years, we've been consistently paying medical claims. So if there's any outstanding funds that are due to service providers, it would be for a reason that either the claim is missing certain information or not, and it would not be in the region of 800 million that is being spotted out there.
But I thought the member, among other things, I'm not going to allow him to questions. It's the your communication system so that people understand why there is a delay. I think that's one of the.
Thank you, Chair. One of the things that we took a conscious decision on 4 years ago was that we had realized also that as a fund we were not talking to our stakeholders. And that's why as a result we were looking ahead to the stakeholders. We have consistent over the last 4 years had engagements with the medical fraternity itself. We have regular engagements with them, organized business and organized labor. We've just had the number, we're having one in Queenstown now on Friday with employers as well. The GEC has been having his program as well as part of taking services to the people who will kick off to those sessions, his engagements with employers and members of the medical fraternity that are representative of them, so that we regularly engage them and keep them informed of where we are going at the fund, what are the issues that we are faced with, and what is it that we're doing. In fact, even when we started the project for the development of the new system, we kick-started that with a roadshow as well. We're telling them, this is what we're going to be building over the next 12 months, and these are the changes that are coming. And we also engage with the stakeholder representatives, the medical associations that are representing the different disciplines. We sort of like regularly engage with them and keep those constant updates of what we have.
No, thank you very much. I think we want to thank the commissioner and the DG on some of the information that the member may not be having, but I think it was at the time that she was not allowed to request the secretariat to just give her that information. That's what I pick up. I didn't want to say to her, no, we're dealt with that, but I think unfortunately she was not allowed at the time. So the secretariat will give her some of the information. Now we will then be dealing with the neglect. Did you take us through the NEDLAC team? Over to you. We'll give the DM when we're done. And then, over to you, teacher.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. For NEDLAC, we have the acting executive director, Mr. Tembo Simkalipi, sitting right next to me, and also the acting CFO, Mr. Jonas Shai. Thank you, Chair.
Simkalipi, over to you. It's closer, they say, well, Mr. Khalid, for those who don't understand, because unfortunately there's no interpretation, during the break, we'll explain why I'm saying, Nyawanampum, between myself and Mr. Khalid, and Mr. Nofen, and we'll understand at a particular time why I'm saying, Nyawanampum. Over to you, Mr. Mkhalipi.
I can assist you, Chair, by explaining it as a cause of Tolingo. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of honorable members and colleagues. The DG has already indicated I'm just acting here. I hope I'm going to get out of this as soon as I can. My presentation is going to deal with the overview of NEDLAC, objections, objective of NEDLAC, air risk, and financial, and work underway in terms of priorities, and then conclude. As you know, honorable members, NEDLAC is set up in terms of the NEDLAC Act, and it's got its own constitution that determines who forms the NEDLAC, and the mandate, as was indicated, is derived from the NEDLAC Act, and the legislation that it concentrates on labor relations, DCA and other, the NEDLAC Constitution and the NEDLAC Protocol the protocol determining how networks operate. The objectives in terms of the networks are basically to promote, strive to promote the goals of economic growth, participation. This is where the issues of the jobs are derived from in terms of the network act. To try and reach consensus, including one argument pertaining to social economic policy, and also the debate that is going on dealing with these issues. Consider all legislation in terms of the labor relations relating to labor market policies, and all legislation that has got social economic impact. I mean, this is one area that sometimes a conflict between network constituencies and government departments, because the law does not define what social economic impact is. It is clear in terms of labor legislation, but social economic impact, the network doesn't say what that is. Now, there's a contestation there in terms of what social economic impact is, what is not. Some government departments will say, well, this legislation does not have a social economic impact, therefore it doesn't have to go to network. The issue of promoting the combination of coordinated policies and social economic matters, as I've indicated. Now, on the going to performance, in the first quarter, NetLeg has performed all their planned targets and achieved all of them. We had 18 targets and we achieved instead 14, because we included one more target that was introduced specially in that quarter. Therefore, all the targets that were supposed to be delivered in the first quarter were delivered in terms of our EEP. Now, these are the issues that we deal with in terms of that period. Program one, which deals with administration, the work achieved in this first quarter was primarily administrative issues that deal with human resources, staff performance, and improvement on from the previous quarter in terms of staff performance, and also the issue of making sure that we have an unqualified opinion in terms of our finances. And that was the issue that we spent a lot of time in the first quarter making sure that those happen. Program two, which deals primarily with the core performance of NetLeg. This is where the real work takes place in terms of the chambers and the different chambers of NetLeg. And the engagement in legislation takes place at this program and set up performance based on strategic goals of NetLeg. The issues about Section 77, when workers want to go on process action, is dealt with in this program. It deals with all those disputes. I mean, we've got currently many disputes around ESCOM, around energy that are taking place around the Section 77 area. That's a program that is the heart of what NetLeg is all about. And the program three, which deals with funding for our constituency, the department, part of the NetLeg funding is to give money basically to labor, business, and community for them to develop their own capacity. And program three is managing that process to ensure that the organization used the money for what it was intended for. Now, during this quarter, one of the most important things that we had to perform was on the job summit. Now, in this quarter, there won't be a report on the job summit that indicates what we've achieved, because the first quarter was, as members would remember, that the job summit was last year, 2018, and then went into election in 2019, and then NetLeg was busy with administration process to ensure we set up processes of that will make sure that the decision of the job summit are implemented. Now, quarter two is going to reflect what has happened in that. When we report in quarter two, we have to reflect what jobs have been saved, if there's been job saved, what jobs were created, and what decisions were taken that will create jobs in the future. All of that will come in our quarter two report. As I said, the most important issue that we're dealing with in this quarter, we're engaging with project owners, government departments, different departments, and employers and companies in terms of their commitment engagement to ascertain the progress that has been made against the commitment that they've made, and what is it that we need to do to assist them, to push them towards the new commitment. And we set up a project coordinating unit that will specifically deal with job survey monitoring. It was set up in this quarter where to recruit staff, to field the staff, and set up processes to make sure that the information that we're receiving is checked and double-checked so that there's no misleading information provided to the president. And members know that the president meets with his project coordinating committee once every month to get a report on the commitments that are made. And as I said, those reports will be submitted in the next quarter. Now, in terms of the risks and the remedial action that we've highlighted here, I think the major one, the high risk that we need to address about governance, the funding document which guides work of networks has not been undergoing congressional review. We, in the process of reviewing the Network Act, reviewing the Constitution, to make it sure that we make it easy, and I'm sure members know that there's a big cry out in the labor market about whether NetLeg is a closed shop of those that are inside the tent, and those that want to come in are having difficulty coming in. And this process is to look at the NetLeg Act, look at the Constitution, so that you are able to make it easy for other organizations who are outside NetLeg to come in, because you want a situation that when decisions are taken in NetLeg, you are confident that there's buy-in by the major player in the labor market, whether it is Federation, whether it is employer condition. You know presently the Black Business Council for a long time was outside NetLeg because of their differences with BOSA, and SASTU is outside NetLeg because of the differences in the labor market there. We hope that this direction that we have been looking at the NetLeg Act, looking at the Constitution, looking at the NetLeg protocol is going to help us to solve those issues so that we make NetLeg as exclusive as possible. And I think dealing with the other high risk, remember, saying that the high risk, the red part is the issue of shared information technology. NetLeg information technology is obsolete. There has been no funding over the last 10 years made in information technology to upgrade information technology. And if anything happens there, NetLeg is not going to be able to operate now. That's a major risk that NetLeg is busy dealing with to solve that problem. The other issue is the issue of a safe environment at NetLeg, the issues of occupational health that we're dealing with in terms of the buildings, in terms of how the building is, and those are the high risks that we've highlighted that we need to deal with in NetLeg. And that's our report, honored members, and the CFO will take over to deal with the financial report for quarter one.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members, DM, DG, and colleagues. As far as the quarter one financial information for NetLeg is concerned, we received our transfer of 20 odd million from the department. That particular transfer, we recognized 10 million of that in line with accounting principles. But all in all, we had 10 million that we recognized in the first quarter as far as revenue is concerned for NetLeg, with a little bit being interest income received. What we then did with this particular 10 million, it was split between the three different programs that ED has spoken about, being administration, core operations, and capacity building. Administration accounts largely for the expenditure there, being 6.1 odd million. And largely this is because the program one houses the compensation of employees of NetLeg. So that would account for the majority of that, those particular costs. 58% to be exact of that particular 7 odd million actually goes towards salary and wages. Another big hit that we deemed quite appropriate to highlight was that there was also quite a huge leave payout as far as the process of the executive director is concerned and the CFO.
as DG had introduced, we are in acting capacities because of the confidence management that has happened at NEDLAC in the last financial year. And as such, because these particular processes have been concluded, the leave payouts were also paid, meaning that also had an impact as far as our expenditure is concerned. And then lastly, what we wanted to talk to was also around the constituency spending, which accounted for about 6%. This is also what ED spoke to as far as the capacity of our constituencies is concerned. So that would be what they had spent that particular money on. Overall, against budget, there is an under expenditure in the first quarter of 2.8 million. Largely speaking, this particular under expenditure speaks to the implementation of the employee benefit scheme at NEDLAC. We do have the unfortunate situation where in the past NEDLAC did not have an employee benefit scheme for retirement or medical aid, and for the 2019-20 year and going forward, this particular scheme has been funded for. And where we were at the first quarter was that this scheme were busy with our supply chain processes, which I'm quite happy to report we have largely concluded, meaning this scheme before the end of the year, we're targeting the 1st of January 2020, will be in. But largely speaking, 5 million has been set aside for that particular scheme. So at the end of the first quarter, half of that particular amount had not been spent, and that largely is attributable to our under expenditure. Did
thank you, Honourable Members. That's our report.
Honourable Members, the report for NEDLAC. Any questions, Honourable Kada, Honourable Nana,
thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. You mentioned some of the challenges to your legitimacy that NEDLAC is facing, and during the annual summit that you had in September, I recall the Business Unity SA President, Sipho Pichana, questioning whether NEDLAC is still fit for purpose or whether it should be relegated to the scrapyard of history. You've had a number of challenges over the recent years, some of which you've mentioned by referring to consequence management and talking about the contravention of supply chain management regulations and the resultant irregular expenditure. There's also the controversy around the exclusion of SAFTU and the impression that's been created that NEDLAC is a closed shop for best interests. So my question to you is, you mentioned that there is a review underway of the NEDLAC Act, and there's a kind of broader philosophical period of reflection underway about what NEDLAC should be doing and how it can improve to be better suited to the future. When will that review process be completed, and can you give us an idea of, if not the likely recommendations of the review, although if you're able to do that, that would be greatly appreciated, at least what areas you plan on focusing on in that review process, and whether the huge unemployment crisis is one of them. We know that the figure now stands at 29.1% for the official unemployment rate. Is NEDLAC giving serious contemplation and thought generation to exactly what role it can play in countering the unemployment crisis in South Africa? Thank you.
Thank you very much for welcoming as well to the presentation. Suppose one of the things that on previous commission that the Act can present us, we wanted to check the organogram. And I would appreciate that if we can have the organogram of NEDLAC, because the major and very serious concerns of the committee was everywhere we are for a transformation. That amongst the things that we're talking about, we need to see transformation as part of everything. Because we don't want to subscribe to the understanding that everything intelligent, everything quality has to be led by men, as if they own their intelligence capacity. We want women to be part of every program, every stakeholder. Hence, we would appreciate if we can have the organogram of as well network so that we can see. Because we will send you packing if we bring the delegation of men only, because that is not what we want. Chairperson, one question that I want to give the clarity on is the threshold of NEDLEC. Who qualifies to be the member of NEDLEC? Because there are so many stakeholders outside who mustn't represent various business, various constituencies, but are excluded in the NEDLEC. I would like to understand what is the threshold in order for one to be the member of NEDLEC. Chair, one of the responsibilities of NEDLEC is to promote and strive for growth and economic participation. And what is the take of NEDLEC in the current situation between various stakeholders, unions, and SAD? As we know that you ended up having a crisis in the international flight. Because if one of your responsibility is to bring together the two so that you avoid to have the Section 77, now that this has happened, what therefore is your take on the current situation that has happened? Chairperson, everyone knows that we are at the moment in the crisis in terms of unemployment. My colleague has said that it's 29.1. It happened, but you talked about the job summit and also to make sure that the decisions of the job summit are being implemented. What has been achieved by NEDLEC in terms of the implementation of the job summit resolution in order to curtail the high unemployment rate? Because instead of reducing that rate, it has moved from 29 to 29.1. And lastly, the Modi has relegated us once more. And yet there are decisions of the job summit. What is the relevance of the job summit as far as the crisis that we are in today? And I would also be of the temptation to say that in the absence of any impact, NEDLEC is doing in order to assist. I think they are coming closer to the dustbin. So what is therefore is it that can be done in order to avoid the crisis that we are currently in the country?
Honourable Mugabe.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the report. Whilst the report in its current form, it gives a best view. We would appreciate, Chair, if ever the indicators are unpacked so that we'll be in a position to understand where are these areas of good performance of this 100% program, where there are challenges in a position to get information. The issue of financial performance
Honorable Zuma.
Thanks, Chairperson. Greetings, DM, DG, and then our guest. Mine is to Lizzie. What are the outreach programs that you have to empower the rural communities to enable them to access funding in order to grow their businesses?
Thanks, Chairperson, and the Deputy Minister. Let me start by uploading your slides 6 and 7 about the performance of 100% on slide 6 on your quarter 1 programs. You achieve 100%. Let me applaud you for that, and also the strive towards the achievement of unqualified audit opinion. That's a good working spirit. That's what we want as a politician. Slide 12 about the risk. You said there is a risk of about the founding documents which might lead to misalignment with the current operation environment and the demand of the country. Who's responsible on assisting? Is it the DG or is it the ministry? Can you give us clarity, because this risk, we don't want you to work with this high risk you highlighted. And also under risk on slide 13 about the IT funding. So who's responsible on funding you on that particular area of information technology? Because we work by IT, we are on the edge to the fourth industrial revolution. So if you're struggling about IT now, it's a very high risk, we agree with you. We just want to know who's responsible to bail you out of that. And you said the OHS, again, where you are working, the working environment. You've mentioned the date. Can you go deep and tell us what is the problem with the risk about the building in your area? And who's responsible to assist you in terms of your understanding? Is it Department of Public Works or is it the department itself under the Director General? Lastly, Chairperson, it's on the slide 15 about the income. Can you explain much about this sundry income of 67,000 rand so that I can understand? Well, I don't want to have an undivided understanding on that. But lastly, you closed by mentioning about the acting position, the finance CFO, acting CFO. There are so many acting positions because of the corporate management previously. Maybe we want to know when are you going to fill this position, or is it the consequence management not yet completed or not? Can you clear us on that?
Thank you,
Chairman. Thank
you, honorable members, DG and the
Thank you, Chair. Again, I'll deal with the easier ones and let the acting president deal with others. On the last question, on the filling of the acting positions, we well on our way to do that. We're hoping that the process will be finalized by the end of December, by the time we go on a Christmas break, we would have finalized the appointment. The recruitment process is already underway. I think on the issue of the risks that you spoke about in slide 12, there are two things that we have to look at. When we have to identify those risks, and we have to put steps to mitigate. And the importance of that exercise is that you become aware of what could happen, and you then make sure that those risks are not they don't materialize. So the fact that they are flagged there as I does not in any way indicate that they may or they will happen. And that's why in the office that we have the, in the network, they would have all the needs to comply with the health and safety. If there's a need for a fire extinguisher, they would have a fire extinguisher. They would have people that they have appointed to deal with the health and safety. So those steps are there. Those mitigating steps are there, and also with regards to the IT funding, we give NEDLAC an allocation every year, and it is up to NEDLAC to look at how they spend that money, and if there's a need for any resource or improvement to its infrastructure, be it IT or so, they usually indicate if they don't have funding. And they've made us aware of this funding, of IT funding, and the department will find it in our budgets to make sure that they have the necessary IT resources or resource to enable them to do the work that they are supposed to do. I want to go back to the question that Chairperson was asked with regards to what NEDLAC is doing. In terms of its relevance on the job summit and in the context of the current crisis. Firstly, one of the objectives of NEDLAC, which Mr. Mkhalidi pointed out, is to seek consensus and agreement on matters relating to social and economic policies. And the issue of jobs is something that was, in fact, even the job summit, it originated from NEDLAC that we need to have a job summit. And this is not the first job summit. It's the second job summit. Now, we decided that when we have this, it must be different from the previous summits that we had. And that's why you had him talking about the monitoring mechanisms that we've put in place to make sure that the implementation of the job summit framework agreement. Now, we all know that the economy is not doing well. So whatever we do is going to be affected by the state of the economy, and that's why we have to work, all of us, government, labor, and business, to make sure that what we said is going to happen, it happens. For instance, if it's a matter relating to government's provision of infrastructure and their bottlenecks in those in the implementation, we need to make sure that those bottlenecks are dealt with, they are removed. And that's why we have this meeting with the president on a monthly basis, first Monday of every month, to deal with those bottlenecks and make sure that investment takes place. And that's why we had an investment summit, an investment conference, because without investment, without the economy growing, whatever has been decided and agreed upon at NEDLEC in terms of jobs, employment, is not going to happen. So NEDLEC plays a very important role in ensuring that our labor market policies provide that climate or that environment that is conducive for investment to to take place. And this is very important because as we move towards the review of NEDLEC protocols, we need to make sure that there's a point raised by Mr. Mkalibi that that everybody is on board. Now, we need to make sure that constituencies that are part of NEDLEC, they are representative of all the sectors, be it business, because even in business, your small business that is saying we're not represented at NEDLEC, and yet we have BUSA and Black Business Council, and they're saying they represent these constituents. So we need to make sure that small business has a voice, and we need to make sure that other federations also have a voice in trying to find solutions to the problems that we have as a country. So I'll let Mr. Kani deal with other issues. I thought I'll just address those issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Chairperson. The first question that asked, what are these areas that we're dealing with in this review that I was talking about? As I've indicated, we're reviewing the NEDLEC Act, the Act that set up NEDLEC. What are the issues that we need to change there? And the process of reviewing and amending any act is going to at some stage land up here in the committee, with the committee to finalize. Therefore, it's difficult to say this is the area that we're talking about, but we're looking at the NEDLEC as a whole. Secondly, the constitution of NEDLEC. The parties that form NEDLEC come into NEDLEC in terms of their constitution, in terms of the constitution of NEDLEC. We're reviewing the constitution to see is there anything in the constitution presently that make NEDLEC not be able to operate optimally, and that's what we're looking at. We're looking on the protocols of NEDLEC, the protocol of operation, how NEDLEC operates, and look at that and say, does it make it difficult for NEDLEC to operate and other parties to come in and take part at NEDLEC? Now, it's going to be very difficult for us to say in the protocol we're looking for this, but the principle, as I've indicated, is that we need to look and say, are these documents creating a closed shop at NEDLEC, as I've indicated? Is it easy for outsiders to be able to come in at NEDLEC? But bear in mind that NEDLEC is made out of four constituencies: business, labor, community, and government. Now, anybody coming in has got to come in either as business, if they are part of the business, they've got to come in as labor, if they're part of the trade union movement, they've got to come in with community if they are part of the community constituency. They've got to come in as government. If there's any other government in South Africa that wants to come in as government, has got to come in as part of government constituency. There's no other entry in NEDLEC except those four entry doors. If you can't go through those doors, there's no other door. That's what the law says. Is there reason to open other doors when the NEDLEC Act is put in front of the committee, and the committee will be able to help us if we don't see any other doors that need to be opened? But as it is, those are the doors. You've got to come through those doors. And technically, those doors are meant to accommodate all society in the country, labor, business, community, and government. Now, the issue of the DG dealt very well with the issue of NEDLEC involvement in economic process in dealing with jobs. I mean, the job summit is a NEDLEC creation. But I think members all know that nobody has got a magic wand that will say, I will do this, and then jobs will be created. Creating of jobs is a process. That's like the president has got billions and billions of commitments. Those commitments are going to take time for them to reflect in job creation in the labor market. That's how the economy works. Now, what are the issues that we deal with? For example, in the job summit, business will ask business, why are you not investing in the mining sector? The business in the mining sector say, well, we can't invest because it takes so long for us to get water licenses, for example. Now, we look at that and say, the Department of Water and Sanitation, what's the problem? How long does it take for a company that is investing to get a mining license? And they come to the meeting with the president, they come to the discussion with the processes and say, this is what it takes, these are the problems. We look at that and try and solve that and say, how long does it take in other countries that are similar to South Africa to give water licenses? And look at that and see, now what's the best period that you can have? Solving that problem is not going to create jobs tomorrow, but it's going to make it possible for investors who want to invest in the mining sector, because water is a very central issue to invest, because now the decisions are taken quickly, and that facilitates that process. That's the process of the job summit. It's not going to be a situation where when you implement that, even if a company is committed, that we are going to make an investment of 100 million, when they make that investment, it will take, as I said, a time for it to reflect in real, real job creation. Now, we know that for our constituencies and society, for them, it's what's the result. But I'm explaining this so that members and all of us can understand when we talk about investment in the economy, what are the time frame that you're looking for? You've got to sow today to reap the benefit some stage at some time. Therefore, that's the involvement of NEDLAC in job creation in all of those issues. Now, I'll explain the NEDLAC structure, how you get into NEDLAC. As requested, we supply the NEDLAC structure, just like all other entities here. We supply the committee with the structure of NEDLAC to show how transformed is NEDLAC. And what's the representation of NEDLAC between gender, race, and the world works. The committee will see that. Who qualifies to be members of NEDLAC? I've already explained that you can only come through those four doors presently. Is there another door needed? That's the issue that we need to look at. Now, on the SAA strike, NEDLAC does not really take part. The system deals with dispute resolution, solve dispute. NEDLAC set up policies and the framework of dispute resolution in terms of the debate, in terms of the legislation, but the actual institution that deals with resolving of dispute in this country is the CCMA. It's not NEDLAC. NEDLAC develop policy, the CCMA and other institutions and government departments implement the policy. Therefore, NEDLAC has got really no role to play in the SAA strike. On jobs, we dealt with that in the DG. What the relevance of NEDLAC in the job crisis, as the DG has dealt with the issue on the job summit, the unpacking of the indicators, if we, in our report on quarter two, we'll try to do better if those that we put in are not impacted properly and unpack them. The transfers, are they quarterly? It's all quarterly transfers. This is quarterly report. It talks about what we've received this quarter from the Department of Labor, of Employment and Labor. NEDLAC's funding all come from the fiscal. The fiscal decides what NEDLAC gets, and NEDLAC has got to ensure that it uses the money properly. The outreach, NEDLAC is a national organization. Unfortunately, as I've said, we do not implement policy. Therefore, it's the constituencies, I mean, the community constituencies, their responsibility to take, to talk to the community constituency in the rural areas. It's a business constituency. NEDLAC brings the leadership of the organization in, and it expects government departments with their policies to go out and implement their policies in all the areas in South Africa. But NEDLAC develops policy, does not implement policies. It assists in the discussion and the development of policies. It's not going to be now able now to take assist small business in rural areas to operate. That can be done properly, more properly by the small business involvement and the agencies that fall within it. But if the policies that they use to do that are not effective, then NEDLAC can come in that space in the negotiations of proper policies to be implemented that will affect positively a small business. The details indicated on the issues of the risk, funding is already set aside at all the transfers that are receiving to deal with the IT problem. As the DG indicated, that this risk, it's our responsibility to highlight the risk, and then we've got to say how do we intend to make sure that risk does not affect negatively. What we've done is to, in our budget for upgrading of our IT system and to make sure that over the period we spend money to upgrade IT system. The CEO will deal with the standard income. The positions of acting decisions indicated that we can also indicate that the cases for the two gentlemen who, the CFO and the executive director, are still continuing at the CCMA because they've taken the case at the CCMA. But there's no reason for us to wait for that process because that process, as members would know, if they lose the CCMA, nothing prevents them going to the labor court. If they lose the labor court, nothing prevents them to go to the labor appeal court. And if they lose there, nothing prevents them going to the constitutional court. It might take another 5 years for the case to be settled. Therefore, the organization should be able to operate optimally in the meantime and will deal with those issues when they are finalized. Therefore, we are going forward with filling of the post so that we don't have acting people in this post. And as the decision indicated, we hope by the end of December. In fact, for the CFO, the interviews are next week. We hope for the ED by the end of December it will be done.
Thanks a lot. Just one or two things, Chair, and thanks for the questions, members. The sundry income, directly, that particular sundry income comes from an employee who left us, and they were owing on their bursary, so that we had to recover that those particular funds. And then also the ED has just given me a note with regards to the transfers, so just a point of correction. With regards to the transfers, we received transfers twice from the department, but what we have recognized, so that it runs in line with our quarter one report, is we've recognized our transfers in a quarterly fashion, so the full report speaks to quarter one in terms of budget. Thank you, Chair.
Can I have a question?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I just want to check, you know, this accusation or allegation that you seem to be preventing others to get in to be part of NEDLAC is quite very strong. And I think how you respond on it is a little bit, you know, passing by it, you know. And I wouldn't expect a situation whereby the belief I had before, I would still carry it when you were here. And you are saying you will actually investigate or try and find out if that is true, that you are preventing others from getting in, something like that you said. And I really don't believe that, you know, you yourself can actually, you know, do the investigation and come up with any thing that somebody is outside may say this is an independent view. I thought that maybe you can request someone else, you know, to check this thing policy-wise and so on, to say, you know, so that when you answer to those, I know that SAFT is very strong on that, and I've heard them so many times. And if you say you will, I'm not sure you said you will investigate policy of the neglect, try and shift whatever, and see if that is correct or it is incorrect. I don't think it's possible that you can manage that yourself. I thought maybe there is somebody else who can actually assist you. I don't know, so that there is nobody who keeps on throwing mud at you about it, say that no, they are failing to meet the requirements. I don't know, Chair, I just wanted to give that comment, Chair, and also to find out how far are you with the, I know you have answered that you are budgeting, now you're putting budget aside to address technology issues. And if you check, how far are you, so that you don't take a long time and maybe you require more budget and all that, but at least you are budgeting. I appreciate that explanation. But according to your assessment, how far are you?
I thought the acting executive director said because the constitution of NECAC stipulates who constitutes part of NECAC. Okay? And because it's an act, they want to amend. They are looking to amend it. And it is then going to come to us because it has got a threshold. That's why SAPTU is complete, because SAPTU does not fall within, if I'm correct, within the threshold. And because NECAC is concerned that they don't want to decline that people are being locked and left behind. So he then said, I don't want to go into details because it is going to come to you as members. For members to then, at a particular time, will then deliberate and say, is this threshold okay? Is this fine? What are the complications of opening up a gateway, if then that is going to be a gateway? So I had a question myself, then I said, okay, let me, maybe the question is not, it will be premature to ask that question for now. I thought it's not that you are not going to be able to answer, or just assisting the member that, in fact, that's what the process you were outlining is, which I think I want you, for me, I want to say, please, the sooner that the department look into that, the better, so that we're able to deal with the. The only area where I'm concerned, DG, is that, while I think it has been addressed, your financial report is just too much vague and simple. Please make the outline. I think when you come the second quarter, we'll then be able to. The only thing that I'm worried concerned is the amount of resources that are deployed to deal with the constituency, particularly community side. Particularly at that side. Maybe at an appropriate time, not now, we'll look into that. Because when we talk about capacity building, I just want to check in relation to the question that was asked to compensation fund, that I hope DG and DM entities are not working in silos. Because if you talk about capacity, I'm of the view that it will be neglect concern in observing the capacity in the trade union movement, irrespective of immigration. Just making an example, irrespective of the sector or the trade union, that I don't know, there are so many labor challenges. Is it because shop stewards understand, or is this because members don't? So that Nontwele was asking that if then this is the case, what then is the relationship of that with the authority? Again, if then there's this program of network of capacity building, in looking into all, what is it, are you able, or whom to name? And it will be a problem if you are in your own island for me. So that question that was asked, I think it's a very important question. It may be difficult, it may be creating a problem for you. But our concern is, we would like to have a country whose labor and whose employer and employee environment is relatively stable for the benefit of the economy. I think in all these questions that we're asking are not about we think we can't do your work, but it's coming that we see that people actually lose jobs as much as government said, we want to create jobs. So I thought my apologies for you, but I think that is the so if you is there anything that you want to say for you?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the capacity building issue. I mean, we as a department we would love to have a situation where we have a very strong employer organization, with a very strong organized labor. Because the labor legislation that we have are premised on that those two will be very strong, and therefore you will have a good culture of collective bargaining. Because when you have that, you have a situation where people are able to decide in terms of what they want, the sector is able to do that, and they take the pressure away from us as a department and we're able to focus on other things. But if you have these two that are weak, they affect the resources that we have as a department, because it means that we have to deploy those resources in the areas where ordinarily we wouldn't, because they are covered by this strength of these two constituencies. We have, besides what NEDLAC does in terms of capacity building, we also fund, we have what we call a strengthening civil society fund. And part of that is to fund an institution called DITSILA, which is responsible for capacity building for organized labor. It's DITSILA and also Workers' College. Now, the difficulty that NEDLAC is going to have is because NEDLAC must play a very neutral role, if you have that, play a very neutral role, because it just provides a platform. Now, if business doesn't want to adapt to the new changes in the labor market and globally, if organized labor doesn't want to adapt to the new changes locally and globally, they're going to perish. And it's all about being able to adapt. And I think that's the reality. Lastly, was it a week or 2 weeks ago where NEDLAC hosted dialogue between the chairman, social partners, and South African social partners. And I mean, what was striking for me was they have same differences that we have as South Africa, but the ability to find one another and the maturity levels that they display in able to decide between what's in the interest of the country and other matters. I mean, for me, that was a strong a strong point that came through. So all of us have a responsibility, the department has a responsibility to make sure that the constituencies have the capacity to be able to play a meaningful role in NEDLAC. And that's why we support them with these funds, providing the funding that we provide to DITSILA and the Workers' College.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Nkalipi. Can we then get Oh, but as you are changing seats, I think you got the question that it can't be business as usual of a major related relation. You heard what Honorable Inanna said. We support that. We will send you packing. Okay. I can see now that are you
I just want you to be
are you settled?
and he's accompanied by the by this Taina Ramanyemi from the office of the FO. That's sitting right behind. Thank you, Chair.
Morning, Chair, members, Deputy Minister, and the DG and my colleagues. Chair, can I check that the UIF report has been read and just go straight and lift up the areas that I want to bring to the attention of the committee? My apologies, Chair. I just want to go through. Thank you, Chair. When you take it.
But I think it's a. But at times, it's got other interpretations. But it's fine.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take members to slide number 8. My page numbers are at the top right corner of the presentation, just for ease of reference. On this slide, Chair, I just want to give the portfolio committee assurance that quarter one performance report for URF has been audited by internal audit, because one of the things that we are driving up front as of quarter one is to address performance information, so that come here and we don't have performance information issues. As you can see on page 9, Chair, there's a feedback from management status of the quarter one, and there's also status as the internal audit. And what you have on the far right of that page is a feedback from internal audit about their interpretation of the evidence that we have presented to justify our achievement of the stretch target. And on all the targets that we set, on all the indicators that we had reported on, even the targets where we have missed, we also requested internal audit to review the evidence provided. So that by the time we achieve that target, we don't have an issue of evidence and also of performance information. And I can safely confirm, Chair, that all the targets for the quota were deemed satisfactory by internal audit. There were three areas where internal audit indicated some concern, even though they said that they were satisfied with the evidence they provided. They were just concerned that there's a bit of misalignment between the two systems that we are using to process claims, CCI and our visual office. That our online platform and our internal platform, they pick up just as a little bit of misalignment, which the operation team is working on to bring that alignment into force. But generally, internal audit is quite satisfied with our evidence that we provided. What we've done also, Chair, we've subjected our quarter one performance report to risk assessment. Because the other thing that we want to test on quarterly basis is whether risk is identified, any possible risk of a target being missed. And if the target is missed, what are the implications of that target being missed to the rest of the population of South Africa? But I've not included that report in this pack. But I think for quarter two, it should be available. When looking at quarter one now on slide 13, Chair, comparing our performance in quarter four that we closed last year and our performance in quarter one, we've seen an improvement of 10% as we are driving to improve UI performance. There's a 10% improvement compared to quarter four in our quarter one this financial year. And we intend to continue on the improvement trajectory. You'll see also in quarter two that there's further improvement, but I will not touch on that for now. Just looking at the areas where we've missed targets, there's four areas, Chair, where we've missed the target. The first one is on page 14. This is the percentage of valid invoice paid within 30 days. We processed 484 invoices in quarter one. We only missed one. Our target is 100%, we're sitting at 99.8. And I'm tempted to take advantage of the Chair that she's done math literacy. So that's 100%, Chair. If you run it off. Chair, on page 15, just on a lighter note, Chair, on page 15, the vacancy rate, as we're sitting in quarter one, we are sitting at 11%, and we had put plans in place to reduce this vacancy rate to below 10%. By end of that quarter, I think in July, we had appointed the 32 call center agents to bring down the vacancy rate to below 10% and 8%. Our drive is that we want to take it to below 5% or below. And right now, for quarter two, we're sitting at 8% with this consistent drive to bring the vacancy rate below. The next one that we is on page 16 is our integrated claim management system. With this target, Chair, we were stuck with the previous supplier that was implementing our technology, that we needed to get a handover report to enable the current supplier to develop the remaining 14 reports for us to go live. And now that has been approved, they are doing due diligence. If all goes well, we intend to go live by end of March. So that comes the new year, we start with a new system for the financial environment. And then the last target that we've made is on page 18, Chair, is 1% of new companies created within 1 day. Our target is to create these companies within 1 day. And we meet a number of targets during the month of May, but we're able to catch up and bring up the target in June when we pick up the program in May, that the firm was in May, and we closed the gap that we picked up in May to pick up the target. And now when everything is in order, you see when we report in quarter two, that we also closed the gap on this target. Chair, I'll move then to slide 23. In slide 23, Chair, I just want to give members our performance on turnaround time. Our target here is 15 days, 90% within 15 days. When you compare to quarter one last year, we're sitting at 91%, we've improved in this quarter by 2%, and we still have reached target. There are areas where the performance is not at the level that you want. The case in point is Limpopo. As one of the interventions we've set up is to have a rapid response team in each province. The Gauteng province has the best rapid response team in the country. As you can see, they are doing around 98%, 99%, and they are our highest volume drivers. This is the same team that you sent to Limpopo to do an investigative work and also to support the Limpopo team to bring up the target. And we expect to see improvements in the second quarter. And also, the other area that we are watching closely is the head office area. Here, the space is driven by our online platform where people apply online. pardon me, Chair. They are applying online, and at the time of the application being complete, the turnaround time is supposed to be up from the time when all information has been submitted. And we still are improving our technology online so that at that point we can recover our turnaround time. Because until the point where the application of the client is complete, it's not a valid claim because they're still missing information. It could be banking details, it could be credit details, so it could be a number of things. And now, in our development of our online platform, that's one step that we missed, and we are developing that to bring it up to speed. And then on page 24, page 25, Chair and members, is the same concept that we've applied on page 23, just outlining how we performed per benefit side. But on page 24, again, Chair, we've improved by 1% compared to last year. Quarter one, we're sitting at 89%. Net profit is 4%, my apologies. We've improved by 4% for this quarter. And on page 25, last year, quarter one, we're sitting at 87%. And this year, quarter one, we've improved by 8%, sitting at 95% against target. And then same applies, you look at page 26. Last year, quarter one, it was 97%. We've improved by a further 3%, and now we're sitting at 100%. The only area where we've dropped is on page 27. I think this is the one that I've outlined earlier. Is the one that are processed within 1 day, where we picked up a program during the month of May. We've missed, last year, quarter one, was 98%, and this year, quarter one, is 93%. And that's the area that we are monitoring closely to bring it up to speed and in line with the rest of the target. Chair, I'm going to, on slide 28, this is just a breakdown of how we performed per month on the target of processing compliance certificate within 10 days. These steps have been met for the quarterly question. And then on page 29, this is just an annual comparison of how we performed per claim, just to show members that over the years, our target has started to improve. And if you recall, members, what I mentioned previously, that we used to process within 35 days, and now we've reduced all these targets now to 10 days, 15 days. And you can see in 2017, that was in 5 weeks, we were performing at 83%. And now we've improved the target to 10 days, and we're already performing at between 92% and 99% in all these targets, which reflects an improvement, both in the turnaround time and also in our effectiveness to process within turnaround time. On page 31, Chair, what I just want to bring to members is the impact of amending the Act. We implemented the Act in January this year, the 1st of January. And you can already see, pardon me, Chair, you can already see on the graph at the bottom left corner, what we paid last year for this quarter was 2.7 billion rands in claims. But this year already we are sitting at 3.6 billion rands in claims paid. This is due to the improved benefit that we've introduced from 1st of January. That gives more money in the pocket of our beneficiaries to enable them to survive in terms of economic pressure, as I think was discussed earlier. Chair, I'm going to give Oustaini a moment to shine. She'll talk to us about the financial positions of UIF, and I'll continue from there. Thank you, Chair.
Well, Chair, I'm not so sure that I will shine, but I'll try. Honourable members, DM and DG, slide 34 is my presentation, the financial performance of the fund quarter one. The first one is problem one, that is our demonstration. We are underspending on problem one. We only spent 26% of the budget due to the commissioner was presenting the enhancement on our systems that we are currently implementing, a major one, which is problem two. That's, I think that's where we need to shine. Yeah, I can shine here because we are really performing because of the improved amendments that we are currently implementing from this year. We started paying the amendments. So the overspending there reflects the payments that we're currently doing. The reason for the overspending maybe is because the budget that we are currently spending on, it was approved last year. So now the budget has been revised accordingly to be able to cater for the amendments. Program 3 is the labor activation program. In quarter one, we didn't actually perform on this one, but now the fund has moved. Members will, in quarter two, will see great improvements on this area because the funding agreements that are already signed off, we are currently implementing, and there's a positive in this area. The economic classification or composition of employees, the vacancy rate that the commissioner has alluded to when he was presenting earlier, which we didn't achieve, is also reflected here on the composition of employees. Also, this area is the area that we are also trying to increase the structure of LEP in our provincial offices. We are confident that this area will also be moving in quarter two. The goods and services is another area, again, is also linked to our systems because that's where the maintenance, the support. So the contracts that we are currently through our supply chain processes implementing, it will show a definite increase in expenditure in goods and services. Also the CAPEX, this is the area where our systems are being improved. We have a number of them that we are currently confident that in this financial year we'll be able to implement as per the plan. The transfers is our benefits and the legal activation. So this is the area that members can see that we are really, really
were spending on, and the budget in quarter two, I think in quarter three, that's when the revised budget would come into effect, because the budget for this current financial year has been revised to cater for this area. So in short, this is the financial performance of the fund. We had a budget of 4 billion, the actual of 4. We are overspending because of the effect of the amendments, but in other areas there are still some improvements that we are pushing to be able to make sure that whatever that we are achieving on the previous slides is also reflected in our budget. So the rest are also reflected here, but we'll concentrate more on those ones that are still need to improve, which is our systems and the data activation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. From slide 37, it is our strategic risk register. As at quarter one, Chair, we had put in place the intervention that we'll be implementing. I think the impact will be visible more when we present our quarter two report, where we have implemented these interventions. But here it was to give members a feel that we've lifted some of the strategic areas that require attention and for members to have sight of them. I think the one area that I want to lift up, Chair, is I think the audit action plan, Chair, in the previous meeting we did discuss the audit action plan. The one thing I just want to lift up is we've set up now a clean audit committee that is led by the Chief Operations Officer to ensure that on a monthly basis there's a direct focus and attention to the audit outcome and also to improve the audit opinion. Chair, on the disruptors, the major of our disruptors on slide 47, the main driver of this disruptor, Chair, is to improve our risk area, the strategic risk area that we've identified. If you look at, for example, the queue management system is intended to bring control at the river sector and also to bring about service delivery and attention to teachers that people are attended to when they arrive at our centers. We also are improving with our the ELF and the USSD to bring services to the people and also to enable people to access our services far from home, so that those that can come to our labor centers are the ones that don't have access to technology. I think the one thing that I've missed here, Chair, was the mobile passes. The mobile passes have been approved. These are the passes that will enable us to go to the rural of the rural with our passes to go and give services there. And this is one of the interventions to address the strategic risk on service delivery, such that we are able to take services to the people. I think I leave that Chair with the action plan. I think what I need to check with the chairperson is whether I do the labor activation now or later on, Chair.
I think
do it
now,
okay.
So that we
Chairperson, with the labor activation, the brief I obtained was to give members a brief of the exit strategy. And in order to do this, we picked one project that we are having now with JL Kluwe. I'm going to take members straight to... We'll start on slide 8, Chair. Just to give members a breakdown of the training in our comrade will be first, Chair.
First, let me just check if all members do have the presentation that you're talking to.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. On slide eight is a breakdown of the training programs that we've engaged with these institutions. The total of 2,161 learners at the cost of just over 100 million rand that we engaged on. It varies from mixed farming, cooking and catering, health, beauty and land technology, game farming, valuer, which is the municipal property assessor that comes to your environment to assess, performing arts and building and civil construction. Now, I'm going to be taking on slide 9, Chair. JL Kluwe enters into a partnership with NetBank as part of the interventions now for an exit strategy. The focus of the NetBank training was to train all the learners first to enable them to have a financial management ability to manage their businesses should they open their own businesses. And part of that of the training with NetBank was to open accounts for their cooperatives, as you see on slide 10, that the majority of the people who were trained by these institutions, all of them were plugged into cooperatives, and with bringing NetBank on board was to enable these cooperatives to have their own bank account and to manage it, and already start, while they're receiving training, have their own businesses, have their own bank account, and also start to engage the market. On slide 11, this is the evaluation property intelligence. This company, Chair, has already committed to employ permanently 50 learners that are going to be doing property audits for ESCOM. They've taken also 50 learners who will be doing rural development and land reforms evaluation. This is part of the exit strategy for these learners that JLTBA has secured. And a part of this exit strategy is now these learners will receive 4,000 rand salary per month, plus 150 per day for food. And already JLTBA will continue to pay the 2,000 rand stipend per month that they'll be receiving until they finish the program, which brings them to be taking home about 6,150 rand per month, which will be able to put bread on the table, but also secure employment for these learners. In total, just for this program alone, there's 136 lab learners that will be taken on board for evaluation of properties at different levels. Moving on to page 12. On page 12, Chair, this is your Chair's duty and nail technology. Some of these technologies have been taken over by foreigners in our country. And now we are bringing these skills back on board to train our South Africans to be able to do nails, to be able to do hair, and even to participate in spa. And because the training program includes giving them the tools of trade, that they have all they require to start their own spa, even from home. But over and above that, besides them starting them from home, JLTBA was able to secure 40 of these learners will be employed by Terra Analytics Resident to form part of their chefs. The other 50 are going to be in the Nail and Beauty, again in the Terra Analytics. And an additional 50 will be employed by the evaluation company, also again as SPA. So part of the training program was for JLTBA to go out and convert for job opportunities for the learners. And last week, I was visiting one of the launches of the program with the evaluation companies where they've committed to be employing these learners. Some of them will be starting. JLTBA also engaged Home Affairs for a further training for the learners, of a further training of 12 months, and also a possible placement at Home Affairs for these learners to continue being employed. This is just to give the committee a feel of some of the one of the projects or one of the shining lights of the labor activation program that we are running in this space. Maybe moving to page 13, JLTBA has further engaged Jabulani Teresa Construction and Services that has already taken 281 of the police and civil learners to be part of their program with the intention of employing them even further. Chair, as I conclude, this just gives what labor activation can do. It is not, this one gives a beautiful picture of what labor activation can do. Not all of our projects, Chair, has this field. Some of our projects only provide for training and workplace exposure. And one of the interventions that we are starting already with the DG tomorrow, we are visiting Crownstown as part of this engagement to engage these training providers to say, you need to do more. You need to be able now to take these learners, not only train them, but also bring them into a workplace space so that they have a job opportunity after they've been trained. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. On condition that all these projects are going to be spread to all provinces, because I see that the concentration is in one province. sure whether it's a pilot or is it what. So, yeah. After the comments, can I get chance? Now,
I must first
comment on the issue of the cooperative's training programs that you are implementing. Specifically, members are shy to say that you are focusing more on KwaZulu Natal. They knew I'm going to attack them. In this case, I wouldn't attack them. But also to request that, you know, I think it's good that we decentralize whatever resource we have in the country, because what we are going to do in the years to come, what we're going to see, we will see the these people who are hijacking programs, tenders, because once you have these people trained in KwaZulu Natal, it means if they are needed in Limpopo, for example, we have to transport them there. And the people there will say, no, 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 but we are here. We are not skilled. What is the department doing? I think we should decentralize these training programs. But also maybe, because maybe there is something that informs you to say we are going to choose this province for this program, and also this district. And the question would be, what informs you to choose certain districts in KwaZulu Natal? I know, for example, that if you talk about Rasset, I was still a councillor when this program was launched in King Tshwane, and now I'm meeting at this site. I know that even in King Tshwane, it's not everywhere in King Tshwane where this program will be running, but it is in certain local municipalities, because maybe there is little bit of availability of land provided by Amakosi and all that. So, but you wouldn't live in the land or animal farming. You wouldn't live, for example, in Kanyamode, because there is a lot of land. So I just want to check what informs you to choose a certain district in that province, but leave the rest. And secondly, there is this project or this training that you have provided at Kwamkwana, traditional authority in King Tshwane, that's in Umhlatshozi. And if you say Kwamkwana, I know that it's about 6 or 7 wards that are benefiting. The Kwamkwana traditional authority, I think it has about 6 to 7 wards. And you are leaving about 26 or 7 wards in the other areas of Amakosi, in the same municipality, which, according to myself, if these 281 learners were, you know, decentralized across the municipality, the program could have touched the entire LM, because at least it is the same local municipality. Although I know that what might have prompted you to go here is that there is a big development coming there of RBM, you know, but just how do we decentralize this training? And I don't know, how do people get information that you are looking for, you know, or you are recruiting? I have never heard every weekend I'm at home. I live every Thursday. I've never heard that there's recruitment or such. And what strategies do you use to recruit? Let's decentralize so that the chair doesn't shine. There's time to say, let's give it to the Western Cape and all the other provinces. I mean, to the Eastern Cape and all the other provinces. It's a very good program. And Western Cape, I'm not correct here. I said it's all the other provinces. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaka.
You'll be aware that a former Labour Department employee was convicted and sentenced very recently. At the beginning of this month at the Witbank Regional Court.
found that he had started a company and registered ghost workers so that he could claim UIF benefits on his on their behalf. I wanted to know what mechanisms does the UIF have in place to police such potential misconduct. And then secondly, I had a question to do with the investment of surplus funds. A few years ago, you were using your not insubstantial surplus funds to invest in digital networking, renewable energy, and the ocean economy. I wanted to know if that is still the case, and in particular, if you could provide more information on what you are doing in connection with the much heard of fourth industrial revolution in terms of investment and scaling opportunities.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize again for coming late. I have informed Mr. Zakusa beforehand. Just a couple of things, and thank you for the report. When you talk about risk, can you just explain to us that you've taken into account the closure of SAA eventually, and about 10,000 employees from ESCOM who are all going to be claiming UIF, maybe you could tell us that you've taken all that into account, over and above all the other parastatals, which are probably double the employment that they should be. And the other question is, I see you, I think I've got the figures right, I see you spent about 100 million rand to train 3,000 people. That sounds a bit weird. If you've taken that money and put it in investment, you would have kept those 3,000 people very happily employed in a small business for the rest of their lives. The third thing is the labour activation program is all very well. You've had it for a couple of years. It's been absolutely useless up until now. Maybe what you could do is sort of collapse it and put it in with what the president is now trying to do. He's now set up a system. In fact, all the departments have set up systems of labour activation. No one seems to be working together. Maybe you can tell us a bit about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Sum. Let me welcome the presentation. But I'm partly covered by some of the honourable members. But at the same time, I'm just asking myself why I'm sitting here. Does the department just take all the projects to Kingbridge? Why? Is it the only municipality in KZN, Kingbridge? Why? Because we are also from KZN. We've got lots of the municipalities there. And I also want to know that which criteria the department was following to select these learners to do this project, because with my understanding, as we are here as the committee, the department is supposed to bring the project to the committee so that the committee will be able to discuss and see the places, especially the rural areas, where we can say this, take this project and decentralize it to those particular areas. Lastly, I wish to know that I didn't count the numbers of the this mixed farming, cooking, catering, and beauty, nail technology, game farming. That after this training, did you try to get something or the job so that these learners will be able to get their job? It must be not the training per se, but after the training, what is next? I think it's a good thing.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Commissioner. Through you, Chair, to teaching. This is one of the commendable reports from your entities. It's comprehensive. It reminds me of the reports that are sent to different stakeholders as far as performance is concerned. They need to be inclusive of all the governance structures that are within that particular organization. And this one is one of them. And it really gives us hope that others as well will emulate what this UIF entity has done. It's just one area of the study to raise that on this program one on slide 30, where you have underperformed, and the reason is, as you correctly was in relation to the outsourced or the external commissioners, what is the plan to absorb them, if ever there is a plan to absorb them tonight, or will it be continuous to have such a problem, and how is it going to affect the performance going forward? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thanks. And let me also follow the line of accepting the report and congratulating the fund for at least kind of helping us to move forward in this respect. I don't want to go into the other comments that have been made, that comment, the reports. Obviously, there are a number of areas where there is room for more improvement as well. There are just 2 points that one wants to raise. The first one is with regard to the reporting on fraud. Is it not going to help us for the fund to also, where for instance there's fraud, cases of fraud, yeah, even if it's just a supplementary, yeah, if it's just a supplementary as part of the report. That's in support of what Honorable Kat has also raised. The second point to share is with regard to the Inspire Generation program. I think I agree that service delivery, the more it improves, the more it takes progress, that is the in terms of demand. So the call for it to be extended speaks to what we want to see. In congratulating the fund with regard to taking forward our commitment of decent work, I think we need to maybe to request whether process is not going to be helpful, at least to get to profile the activities. Yeah. So that it also empowers service providers on the ground. Like, for instance, you have this JLD Institute, which basically seems to be the driver of the program on the ground. So the question would be, to what extent does the department also engage with other institutes of similar nature to ensure that this kind of innovation and support in the rollout of the labor education programs is in fact taken across the country and into the provinces, all the provinces. Thank you.
Just a comment in the end of being congratulated in the area of improvement. I think in slide 23, Shad, please, in the next quarter, we don't want to see percentages only, also African. think if you can endorse and reflect on the number of claims that have been approved and those that have been rejected. I think if you can percentage fine, but we must really see. So responses. Let him respond what has been applauded by the government. So he must respond to all the questions.
Okay. thank you, Chair. I think the overall comments on the labor activation program are welcome, Chair, and we really appreciate the input from the members. What I want to highlight to members is the JLTWA was just to give the committee a feel of what we are doing. But we have a full report that will make available to the members by Friday that covers all the provinces and entities that we brought on board to implement in all other provinces. So that these members get a feel that it's not only about KZN, but KZN was just an example of the work that
we do. And the challenge that you are going to say PE, he's going to ask why not Kazan. And in PE, I'm going to ask why Motherwell not Kazan. But it's fine, as long as we're going to get that breakdown. And gentleman next to you is going to ask why not Makanda. So.
Yes. In fact, one of the interventions that we started with the DG. The digital initiative is to go to these stakeholders, and Makanda is one place that we will be spending 2 days on tomorrow and Friday, to source job opportunities and engage partners in that space to bring us more opportunities of employment and not only training, so that there's an exit strategy. In terms of election, Chair, when we selected the partners, we took out an advert in the media to ask government entities in a particular schedule to bring us proposals, and we had broken down the type of proposals we were looking for. And they did apply, and they were taken through an adjudication process, and these suppliers were selected. And I think in the report you will see the number of suppliers that are listed in the budget and the kind of training that will be engaging. When we select Leonard's Chair, our focus, because this is a UIF project, it's UIF beneficiaries, and we are focusing on UIF beneficiaries that have lost their jobs and are sitting at home. So we use the SR system to draw these learners, and we take them from there. So that means we go as far as the district, the voting district. So if we have a project in King Petroleum, as an example, we'll go deeper into the labor center, the voting district, to pull out people. But it has to be people who have lost jobs and are UIF beneficiaries. But we don't leave it there, Chair. And part of our intervention, because this is the Department of Employment and Labor, we've opened a space for 30%. That if we're going to recruit 100 people, 70% will be UIF beneficiaries, but 30% will be non-UIF beneficiaries. So that we're able to bring even more members of the community that can benefit from the programs. I think, Chair, yes, we've decentralized the programs I've mentioned. They go to all the provinces. In terms of fraud, I did indicate earlier that the problem of fraud that we picked up in Witbank and other provinces too is some of the control gaps that we've highlighted in our risk register. And some of the interventions that are indicated as disruptors include automating our processes, including introducing biometrics, so that we know who's approving a claim. And we can have a biometric for logging in, biometric for approving, biometric for processing a claim. In that way, we are able to track and trace whoever has been waiting on a claim. And the biometric process is underway. In terms of the investment portfolio and fourth industrial revolution, Chair, We last year launched a project development partnership of about 2 billion rand. And in those projects, 4IR is one of the key focus that we are bringing to that that investment of 2 billion rand. But we are not limiting it to that investment portfolio alone. We're also stretching it in other investment portfolios so that it's relevant to the kind of economy that we find ourselves in. And maybe, Chair, in the future, you can allow us time to present about the investment portfolio and what areas we are covering, so that this is a more comprehensive report on our offering. I think, I've explained, Chair, the LEV project on why there's a spread, or why we're focusing on why we're focusing on KZN today. With respect to National Treasury, National Treasury has indeed approved and started the process to bring in the service provider to do a handover. We've already appointed the service provider for the whole of the Department of Employment and Labour for self-implementation, and then we take over the project once we have a handover. The rollout, the plan to follow up in terms of placement, I think we started with what we are doing tomorrow and Friday. It's one of the initiatives that we've undertaken to engage these service providers. We intend to have this project as a nationwide program so that we engage the service providers that are funding and say, we've funded you for training. Now we want you to go an extra mile and start and making sure that these people that will be trained have job opportunities and a place in gainful and reasonable employment. Is part of our change that we are going to be undertaking moving forward, Chair. We have an agreement with small businesses. We don't have an agreement yet, but this is one of the initiatives that the TT has poked us to start working on. We are busy in terms of reference on what that agreement will involve, but it's on our radar. The director general instructed us to start working on that agreement for enterprise development, and not only small business, but include all the any CIFA and all these developmental funding institutes, so that as part of the drive for enterprise development, we engage all the relevant funding instruments that can enable funding for the SMEs to take them forward. Chair, the others are comments for us to improve our work and make it better, and we'll take it further and improve our next reporting and also how we do that. I think I'll end my attention.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are a couple of questions that the Commissioner did not respond to. Whether with the current wave of retrenchment and all that, whether we have made contingency plans for that. Yes, we have made plans, and the CCMA is actually working hard to make sure that a number of these retrenchments do not occur. And part of the report that goes to NEDLAC as part of the Job Summit report is the indication of the extent to which CCMA has been successful in dealing with the Section 189 applications. So, not all the announcements that companies make in terms of the total number of people that are going to be retrenched are indeed retrenched because of the intervention. But in the event that those retrenchments do go ahead, the fund is in a healthy state to absorb those retrenchments. The other one, Chair, is whether that we're spending a lot of money that could have well been invested and accrued interest. I think we decided to invest on people, and we expect what we call social return. And you will never invest and get social returns if you you don't spend this amount of money. So we've taken a conscious decision. But what we are trying to do, though, which I think is the point that the honourable member says, is that we need to look at the cost of this intervention, in which we have began to do. One of the interventions that we're making now is that we want to deal with you as a company, for example. You say to us, yes, there's 20,000 young people. As to what you do in preparing those young people for employment, it's really up to you. But what we're going to fund is not the actual training, it's the placement of those young people in employment. The reason why we're doing that is that the cost of training has artificially been increased because third parties or the intermediaries, they get 5% or 10%, 20% management fee. Now, they don't have the capacity to train, so they will then contract another service provider who's actually the one that will do the training. Now, when you begin to count the total cost of training per head, you start when you look at the full value of the contract, or you start when the actual deliverer of the training takes place. So we've decided that we'll cut the middlemen or middlemen to be sensitive to what Honorable Munafzo was talking about. We'll cut the middle person so that we deal with one service provider who's able to deliver the training and make sure that there's placement of young people and employment. I think we've been given this responsibility now to coordinate all issues relating to employment, and we are beginning to do that. And the Honourable Chairperson and the members will see when we bring to the committee the employment policy, because that employment policy allows us to do the overall coordination in terms of how we're going to do it. So we are working with other government departments. In fact, next week we will be presenting, the Minister and the DM will be presenting a national youth employment strategy to the cabinet cluster. And of course, we'll then bring it to the committee in terms of the content of that policy. Thanks.
Jim?
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, to our DG and our official. I think, Honorable Chairperson, we must agree that the first quarter reports to this committee, especially of the entities that are here, to a certain greatest extent, they do reflect our efforts and commitment towards the committee recommendations previously in our other meetings about, in particular, the remedial actions from the agency report and the alignment to the reconfigured Department of Employment and Labour. So I think we agree that I'm sure you see some progress from the last presentation, especially from the committee that presented last time. But also, Chair, to pick on what the Chair said earlier on the report on the compensation fund, about the fund not necessarily communicating to its beneficiaries on time about its plans, and I think it's a shortcoming from our side or from the side of the fund itself. And I think both the DG and the Commissioner will actually take the advice that they have to communicate our plans with timelines to the beneficiaries, the end users, and relevant stakeholders on time. Also picking up on the compensation fund, as Honorable Chairperson, I think that at some point the fund must present to the portfolio committee. It will be very important that they present a comprehensive report to the committee of legitimate claims, as opposed to what they said might necessarily be false claims or fabricated claims or fraudulent claims. So there should be a distinction. Surely they should have been able to identify such, and it would be interesting for the committee to be presented with such. Over and above that, with regards to the SAA strike, I'm sure all of us, it should be something that you all are worried about. We are represented currently by the CMA in these difficult negotiations that are moving, and we are receiving constant updates, and in this regard, and at some point we think that we will come back and report to the committee about the outcome, but currently there's no outcome, there's still negotiations. We are hopeful that the matter is receiving the necessary attention it deserves, and that all parties that are involved will reach an amicable solution soon rather than later. We know how much it's costing the SAA on a daily basis, and we know what that does to our economy, and we are hopeful that they will reach a settlement soon, and we'll report back to the committee with the details of such. But also, Honorable Chairperson, we need to mention that today, among other things, that the committee spoke tough about at some point has been the Quiet Amendment pending the Constitutional Court case. I'm pleased to report that we are tabling the Quiet Amendment to Cabinet soon, and this gives us a good opportunity to address the High Court decision on domestic sector regulation. And among others, already DG has alluded to the fact that a comprehensive integrated youth employment strategy is already on the agenda of Cabinet. And as we alluded to the previous meeting, Honorable Chair, that we are ready to present to the committee about such strategy, so that the committee also knows what you're talking about. I'm not going to talk much, especially about the UIF, because I'm sure everybody is excited. I don't want to spoil the fun of the honorable members for having applauded the UIF for doing good. But just for in a second, I think on issues of NetLeg, we have recently agreed at the NetLeg summit, I think we've all the stakeholders, that at some point, the NetLeg Act protocols and its constitution needs to be reviewed. And these are some of the things that we need to open up. We are discussing some of the opening up of, and I think the way the DGA explained to it, like the honorable member raised the matter, we are not running away from anybody or anything. People who must get into NetLeg must comply with its protocols. And this is why we are trying now to review the protocol so that we are able to open up. But such matters are receiving attention. I know in the last session on NetLeg, there are applications. People do apply, and those that honorable members might think that they are being closed out are applying. What is happening is we are checking, verifying information as per the protocols and the constitution. Because if you have to be admitted, there are certain protocols and processes that you need to comply with. So it's not that there's anybody being closed outside. It might be a very misleading statement that other people are being closed outside, but everybody is being looked through their, in terms of the applications, in terms of the current, because we have not yet reviewed, but in terms of the current status quo, we are checking on everybody. But Honorable Chairperson, I think just in passing and in closing, I think honorable members might have missed like some of the presentation where I think they have achieved the target which was not necessarily planned. And I thought that the honorable members would have asked a question interestingly as to what the target was, because it was not necessarily targeted, but it was achieved, and which actually then means that the entity has overachieved to be 100% on program two, which is the core business of NetLeg. I think you should have either seen it or you might not have seen it. But at this point in time, honorable chairperson, I want to thank you once more, and honorable members, for the tough love that you continue to give us, and we are committed to executing our functions to the best of our abilities, and once more, we are committed to this process. Very excruciating, I must confess, but it is necessary, and I think we are supportive of the process. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, GM. I like that you are very of the department. Where you think that we're not fair, you raise that to us that the latter about NetLeg is quite it reflects on ministry that is closer and more, you know, monitoring what is happening in the department, which we think is very important. Two, we will monitor, and I think the compensation fund has observed that maybe it's because it has been under pressure for some time, CFO, that you didn't have a financial statement for quarter one, but in moving forward, I think that we will improve on that, and on areas, even in areas where we want detailed information right across all. I want to request that the department request, because CMA is not here, we must get the information on retrenchment that has been undertaken through the process of CMA, right across all sectors, because that is going to be very important. And also the breakdown of the project. I'm happy that this project are addressing, among other things, UIF beneficiaries. It's going to be very important that we get that information per province, per sector, as you are saying, and per region. I'm raising that because outside here, government is being accused of not being interested in doing, in taking care of people that have lost jobs and those projects, the age limit is going to be very important. Age, gender, and the ability, whether they do have people with disabilities. Because there's a narrative that the ANC-led government is, well, maybe the whole negativity which is coming out of the Sondo Commission cloud some of the things that have been done TM by some departments. And this department is in a spotlight because it has got the employment side of it. And how then? Because when we go to our constituencies, we must then be able, and we'll come back if some of these things are just a nice to fill information. And I think the question that has been asked that how then to ensure that those that have been are coming out of those projects there are then being placed. For instance, those that are trained on beauty therapy, whether males, whatever, they are spouse, they are hotels. And it is true
That's why in this committee we are to look into this, that some of these things, of these projects are being taken over by foreign nations. I think this thing that we're forever being accused of being xenophobic makes us not to come up front and say, in fact, this is what, in addressing that, this is what we think we have observed, that, and it's a fact. I may be accused, and I will stand accused. Each and every beauty salon or spa in a hotel you go to. If you go to Canal Walk now, you'll see Chinese salons and spas. Why is it that here we don't have a spa that is owned by young black South Africans, whether male or female? And where we are not doing right as a country or as a government, as this committee, we wouldn't miss our ways. But where we think that government is unfairly being accused, it's not that we're coming into defense of government, but we want to say, yes, this government that is led by that minister goes. And I'm challenging the Western Cape government. It must go to Canal Walk. Why is it not taking any interest in ensuring that it challenges the Department of Labor through this project of UIF? Now it's about time. In the last 25 years, we have been accused of not doing. It's about time that we then stand up for that leadership and say, yes, as the country, we have done this. Yes, as the country, we have failed here. Yes, as the country, we are improving in doing ABCD. And I hope, as members of this committee, irrespective of our political or our ideological affiliation, the legacy that we must leave between now and 2004, we must be able to stand up and say, this is what we have done. Huh? No, beauty therapy is not a skill. I'm still saying. Making one really big, no child room, yes, I would get. It's not a skill. If other countries, and it's not a secret, I'm finding very strange, media is not here. I'm finding very strange that media is not here. I mean, in other countries, they have got regulations. If you are going to come and build here as a construction company, 75%, make an example, 75% must be people of this country. Am I dreaming? In other countries there are those regulations. Why as South Africans, as South Africa in particular, we are holding ransom by South Africans themselves, Akali or African, Akali or African. I don't know, we're in Africa, yet Africa belongs to everybody. Nurses have gone to work in London, they went to Saudi Arabia, but they were there, can they be ordered? They were there in Saudi Arabia, but they have to abide by the laws of that country. Same applies in London. So it's not a new thing now. Africa belongs to Africans. And Africa must not allow herself to be divided. But Africa must not pretend to be a banana continent. It must have rules and regulations, like everyone. I don't know why the excitement. So I think we have got that responsibility. As government is going to be looking into into its constitution have to amend as department in terms of corridor. I think as this committee, we must lead in some of the areas without any fear. I'm very jealous of my country. All of us are jealous of our country. It depends. Maybe we are influenced by our ideological outlook. But in the center, majority of people outside here are hungry. And those that are, it can't be at the expense of the ordinary South Africans. I will explain this to the highest office of the land, why I'm saying it can't be at the expense of the ordinary people. And it is the African National Congress that is going to take the knock that it has neglected the people of South Africa. And we've got that responsibility to protect, not only for the benefit of the African National Congress, but for the benefit of the people of South Africa that are led by the African National Congress. Having said that, thank you very much. Next week, before we write, we must get all that information. Thank you very much. Can I have members? Can members?